Hi, everybody. Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, our guests are newly married, Mary Rumiano and Susie Stonefield. Mary is retired from a diverse work history, from cheese to chocolate, to ice cream, to windows, to laundromats. She loves how things work. She's passionate about rescue dogs. She's had 12. Riding her bikes, being in nature, and connecting with friends, especially her wife, Susie. Hello, Mary.
Hello, how are you?
Nice to have you. I can't
Thank
wait
you.
To hear both of you share. Yes.
And Susie Stonefield is a transformative grief and creativity midwife. Her passion is making people cry with art supplies. She's also a very proud mama to three amazing adult humans and a very proud wife to Mary. Susie came to the queer table late in life after finally embracing her truth at age 56. She and Mary live in the very welcoming community of Chico, the unceded territories of Mechupta people. Hello, Susie.
Hello. Good to be here.
Oh, yeah. It's so great to have you.
We're really looking forward to speaking with both of you in more detail and learning more about your lives. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of June 1st, 2025. In Russia, Apple has been fined for violating the country's anti-LGBT propaganda law. In a series of rushed hearings closed to the public at Apple's request, a Moscow court last week fined the tech giant in three separate cases for violating Russia's anti-LGBTQ+ propaganda law. These are the first cases brought against the company under the latest iteration of laws meant to erase LGBTQ+ identities, which President Vladimir Putin has called evidence of moral decay in the West. Apple has been found guilty of three administrative offenses related to LGBT propaganda and fined 7.5 million rubles, which is about $93,500. A fourth case alleging Apple failed to take down unspecified non-LGBTQ+ online content that Moscow now deems illegal earned a fourth fine for the company. Apple was subject to Moscow's first major punitive action around LGBTQ+ propaganda back in August of 2023, when a Moscow court fined the company for failing to remove, quote, inaccurate content concerning the war in Ukraine and accused it of targeting minors with LGBTQ+ content in a destabilization effort directed at the government. That hearing was also held behind closed doors at Apple's request, with company representatives citing, quote, commercial confidentiality. Apps depicting same-sex couples were reportedly among the content to be found in violation of the anti-LGBTQ+ propaganda laws. And here in the U.S., in Washington State, Governor Bob Ferguson has signed a comprehensive student rights bill into law that protects LGBTQ+ youth, angering some Republicans who feel the legislation squashes parental rights. House Bill 1296 bans discrimination against marginalized groups, including LGBTQ+ people, and establishes clear complaint procedures for when violations occur. It also limits parental access to children's health care and counseling information, which will protect many LGBTQ+ students from being outed to their parents without the student's consent. The governor said, quote, "The top priority of our school should be to ensure a safe learning environment where every student has the same chance to thrive," end quote. Washington voters did pass a Parent Bill of Rights last year that granted parents access to their kids' medical and academic records. Opponents of the new law say it tramples on these rights. Republican State Senator Nikki Torres said, quote, "This bill will erode parents' trust. This bill is very disrespectful to parents and to families," end quote. But the bill's sponsor, Democratic Representative Monica Gerardo Stonier, said, quote, "Youth deserve a place where they can be seen and acknowledged in their full selves and experience a full curriculum," end quote. And in New York, Heritage Pride, the nonprofit organization that produces New York City's official Pride festivities, announced this last week that it's facing a $750,000 budget shortfall this year, thanks to major corporate sponsors scaling back or canceling altogether their donations. Last Wednesday, New York Pride co-chairs Kaz Alexander and Michelle Iramia said that while the overall number of partnerships is up compared to last year, the organization only has reached 75% of its 2025 fundraising goal. This announcement comes as Pride festivals across the country have faced similar situations this year, with corporate sponsors reassessing their contributions in light of both the economic impact of the federal administration's new tariffs on goods imported to the U.S. and the administration's ongoing efforts to dismantle diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, both across federal government and the private sector. And here in California, Democratic junior U.S. Senator Adam Schiff is set to make history this June as the first member of Congress's upper chamber to ride in the AIDS life cycle. On May 23rd, Schiff announced his participation in this year's ride and asked his supporters to donate toward his goal of raising $3,500. Schiff said, quote, "You may not know this, but I was the first member of Congress to participate in the ride back in 2014, and now I'm going to be the first U.S. senator to do the ride in early June." The 545-mile bicycle fundraiser across California nets millions of dollars each year to co-beneficiaries, the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, and the Los Angeles LGBT Center. This year's ride will take place from June 1st through the 7th, and due to declining participation, it will be the last ride. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moraglia.
And if you just joined us, we are talking with Susie Stonefield and Mary Rumiano, newly married. And again, we want to thank both of you so much for giving us some time from your very, very busy schedules. So, newly married, we're so excited for you. Why don't you, Susie, why don't you talk about a little bit and then Mary can join in?
Well, we got married April 5th. And it was really an incredible day. It felt, for me, it felt really coming full circle. My kids were there, just holding just such loving space for us, so excited for us. And my mom was there, and my husband was there, my ex-husband. My kid's dad and Mary's family. It was the first time that all of her siblings had been together in 20 years. So that was really amazing to have everyone show up for us that way. I'm Jewish and Mary is not. And we incorporated some Jewish traditions, and our chuppah was a pride flag, an inclusive pride flag. It was so beautiful. And there was just a lot of color, a lot of rainbowy color everywhere. And it was just really special. And at the same time, we both look at the pictures and are like, is that us? Did we do that?
It was more like, do you remember that picture? I don't remember that picture.
That happening.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What, you like so out of it and you just, well, what?
Kind of. I mean, it was such a... like surreal time. I mean, you're so in the moment and you want to talk to all these people and you're getting moved around. And it's just like, I don't know. It was like, it was a little bit of euphoria in there that kind of clouded me, but you know, I was just wanting to make sure I got to see everyone. Mm-hmm. And that was important. Yeah. It was just a weird thing for me. It was really hard to stay in my body.
We actually tried to make it as non-traditional as possible and really original to us and queer as we could possibly come up with. And one of the things we did was we invented a ritual that really did help us stay in the moment to the point where we didn't remember anything that our officiant actually was saying during this ritual because we were so... in the moment. And basically it was six tastes of food in six different flavors. And then he used each of the flavors as a metaphor for relationship and life. So salty, bitter, sour, sweet, spicy, and umami, which is like savory. And so we'd sent each sent him lists of food, and then he created this like little platter of different tastes. And then as he served each one to us, we ate it, and he talked about that flavor in a relationship.
Wow. Who created that? You thought of,
I
oh,
thought
that's
of it, and we
beautiful.
built it up together with him, and yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it? It was really, really
Can
good.
you remember some of the things that were said for salty or spicy or sweet?
We had to actually read his script because we were in the moment, like that flavor. I mean, what I can tell you is I remember tasting each of the things more than the rest of it. I mean, no, I can't tell you what he said, but I can remember that when I tasted the sour, it just brought, it sort of brings tears to your eyes. It was a piece of Meyer lemon, and that actually has a little bit of sweet to it too. So it for me, it was tolerable, but Mary got this look on her face, And for spicy, we had wasabi, and wasabi is actually something we can talk about, later, but wasabi is like a key to our relationship. It's like a code word for something really, really big and important that we talk about. And we can explain that. So when we tasted that, I think for that one, it was that one. The photographs of us are hilarious because we're just like,
Well, how much
our
wasabi did
eyes.
you, how much did you take into your mouth?
Tip of the spoon.
Oh,
Yeah. Just the tip of the spoon. Yeah.
that's a lot.
Do you remember any of the flavors?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I remember all of them. Yeah.
Oh, Mary has a script to
That
share.
should
I'll
be.
just go very quickly. The lemon was. Sour is a sudden pucker of your lips, the sharp pang of, oh, that was unpleasant. But it's also the resilience and fortitude built in the hard moments, the times when you found an inner strength to overcome.
Perfect.
Salty is a sensation of contradiction. It is both additive and subtractive. Spicy wasabi is unpredictability, excitement, passion, fiery moments. Dark chocolate was bitter. Bitterness is actually necessary complexity. And umami was cheese. It's the savoriness, the hidden, inexplicable, overwhelming depth of flavor in food, but also in life.
And then there was
So,
sweet.
oh, sweet, sorry. And we had honey on a Fuji apple, which was really good. Sweetness is joy and the revelry the two of you have in facing every day a little
So,
bit
and
more.
that,
So
yeah, that's just a little
that was just a
bite of each
little
of them.
snippet of each one, but
Oh,
he talked
thank you. Wow,
about.
that's powerful. Wow, that's remarkable. You guys can, you know.
People have said that. I don't know how you do that,
Yeah,
but
that's beautiful.
yeah, we tried to literally make it as non-heteronormative as possible. Like we started it with people coming and eating and drinking,
And
and
get to
then
know each
in
other.
getting to know each other, we had Susie thought up some games that they could play, and like we had a bingo card and another thing that. A little button with each of us and our baby pictures, and I was like, "Who did you meet first?" So you put the button on, and then people knew who to talk. They could talk to, "How did you meet?" and "How did you meet?" and whatever,
Oh,
stuff like
great.
that. And so it was interactive and very rainbowy and queer and yes, very.
We had a program, and on the program it said, "We know that our love is an affront to the patriarchy." And we relish
And so
Yeah.
family, they were all accepting of that quote, right?
I guess. I mean, no one has said anything, and that nobody left, and it was good. I think both your family, probably more than mine, was as accepting. But my sister and I are very good friends, and we both think alike, and she's very, very, very supportive of me and my life. My brothers, I don't see very often, and we don't see politically eye to eye, and so it's a little bit of a estrangement. I don't know if I'd say that, but we just hardly ever talk. So it was really nice that everybody came, and all of my nephews came except for one because he lives in France, and so he didn't make it, but all my I have four nephews and they all came with their partners, and so yeah, it was great. It was really good that way.
Yeah. And for me, having my kids there was everything. Like the most important thing when people ask me, what was your favorite part? For me, it was that my kids were there, the way they were there, because I went through a very hard time with them. I came out at 56. I had been married to their dad for almost 30 years. I had been, to my knowledge, straight my whole life. And then at some point, questioning, and at some point, finally couldn't deny it anymore. But when I came out, they were actually more accepting of that, like the fact of my fluid sexuality, but not okay about us getting divorced. Because of course that meant the whole family structure really got to be deconstructed and then had to be reconstructed. But the worst part was that I moved out, and 6 days later, the pandemic shutdown started. And so I moved into my own apartment, first time in 30 years, and then suddenly couldn't have contact with my kids because we were all so terrified of each other, right? Everybody was like, ah, can't have contact. And one of my kids worked at Starbucks, and another one worked somewhere else. And at that time, if you can remember back to the beginning of the pandemic, when we were all unsure of how to even be with each other, I suddenly was all by myself, basically, and unable to touch my kids. And I'd been such a hands-on parent. And then add to that that I had just gotten into basically this very, very challenging, emotionally abusive and controlling relationship. And so even more so was isolated from my kids. And so when I finally got out of that relationship almost like 2.5 years later, the whole pandemic, we'd been going through that pandemic. I barely spent time with them, and they were not happy with me and had felt really rejected by me. And so there was a lot of repair work that had to happen. So the fact that in the weeks before our wedding, my kids were sending me all of these loving messages. I can't wait to come. I'm so excited for you. And they love Mary so much. And my mom too. My mom just like adores her. My mom would rather talk to Mary when she calls us than me. And I think she loves saying when she gets off the phone with us, "Bye, ladies." For some reason, that cracks me up. But anyway, the fact that my family was there with that much full-hearted love was so incredibly healing, really.
I can see it. The listeners can't, but I can see it. You look so beautiful and happy because of your family. That's great that you repaired and reconciled all that stuff.
Yeah, and it was, some hard conversations, like me listening to them talk about how unhappy they had been. And scared of losing me in that relationship. And also having some hard conversations with my mom. Because I had been so straight for so long, my family was just like, what? And the thing was with my mom was so mad at me. Everyone loves my ex-husband, and that was one of the reasons I didn't come out for such a long time. We were like the power couple at our synagogue and all these things. And I knew everyone would be like, "You're what?" Like, it didn't make any sense. And my mom was in particular, very, very upset with me and upset about him, like what would happen to him and what would happen to me. And but then I dove into my exploration of being queer, and I didn't want to have to hold space for her anger and her sadness. In fact, I didn't want to have to hold space for anybody's grief about what was happening because I wanted to go figure out what the hell was going on with me and celebrate it, honestly. So after I left that relationship 2.5 years into the pandemic and everything, I ended up having a really deep conversation with my mom and asking her about what were her questions, because we'd never really spent time listening to each other that way. And it really helped. It really helped. Actually, it was a suggestion of this woman I was dating. She's like, "Why don't you ask your mom if she has any questions about you?" So I did. I did on Yom Kippur, actually.
So, Susie, I'm curious, what questions did your mother have?
"I don't understand," she said. "You always had a boyfriend." And I was like, "I know. Imagine how surprised I was to figure this out."
Really?
And I told her I had befriended a lot of lesbians in my time. I had, in the 80s when I was in college, there were queer women in my programs, and I would ask them all these questions till they came out to me quietly, in a note or in a whisper or something. I thought, when I look back on that, I thought, "Oh, I was just such a nice person." I was like, no, they were my type, and I was so interested in them. I just didn't ever, ever, ever think like, "Oh, maybe you should go a little farther with this curiosity." Really is sort of ridiculous when I look back. But I don't know, for whatever reason, that was how closeted I was to myself. So I told my mom that, and she said, I'd been out for like almost 3 years by this point, and she said, "I notice you're really attracted, like you always are dating women that are pretty masculine presenting." And I said, "Yeah, like that's really attractive to me." And Sheridan, I don't know if you remember, maybe you do, but early on, because I knew both of you when I first came out, and before, and early on, I said to you, "Introduce me to your friends." And you're like, "What's your type?" And I said, "Type? What do you mean type? What's that?" It's like, "A woman. I don't know." And so I thought about, like, you were like old, young, butch, femme. What's your type? And I had no idea what that even meant. But then come to find out that the women that I had been definitely noting over the years, over many, many years, were butch. And the thing that surprised me about that was that I'd been having fantasies about really feminine women, but that was because I just thought woman like that. And also because I have become way more feminine as I've become, come into my queer identity. So that was interesting. I don't know if I really explained it to my mom very well. Then one other thing that she wasn't curious about, but she really needed to hash out with me, was that she really didn't appreciate how I came out to her, and she was like traumatized by it.
Well,
So
how did you come out to her?
yeah, Mark and I went down to her house in Oakland and had an afternoon with her, and then we're like, "Let's sit down, we have something to tell you." And she was so blindsided. She says, in her memory of it, we sat there expecting her to have a parade for me, and she just wanted to run out of the room. And she said that Mark looked stricken, and I looked like I expected this thing from her. Who knows? Anyway, I talked to my rabbi, our rabbi, Erwin Keller, who's queer, about it around that time, and he said, "There's no good way to tell your parents that." In his experience, if you tell them on the phone, they say you should have told them in person. And if you tell them in person, I said that to my mom, and she was like, "No, you should have told me on the phone." But anyway, it all ended up, once she met Mary, she was like,
Yeah,
"Oh."
it's usually we've heard many times when that happens, when the person go and tell, come out to their family, sometimes you hear, "Oh, we've known since b the beginning," right? You heard that one too. So you don't know, like Irwin said, you just never know what's the right way.
So Mary,
Yes.
when did you come out?
Good question. I never did. I don't think I ever did. I knew from a really, really young age that I was different, and I liked girls, for whatever reason. Tried to be straight. That didn't work at all. In high school, I had a PE teacher who took a
a very strong interest in me, and I was enamored, you know, because whatever. We spent a little bit too much time together, and my parents got involved and went and talked to her and said, "You need to back off," which behind my back, I didn't know this. But anyway, I went to college. I took a human sexuality class, and I heard a lesbian speak about something, you know, and I'm like, "Oh, this has got me thinking now." So it was a couple of years later. I joined a softball league in the town I was going to school and met a bunch of women, and we all pretended like we were straight and we all weren't. And then I got a girlfriend, my first girlfriend. And, you know, so it was just kind of from there. And I never, my dad never knew because he died when I was 18. And so, you know, I hadn't really come into myself yet. And then, oh, I don't know, it was probably 35 or 32 when I told my mom. And she's like, "Yeah, I kind of already knew that."
You
And it
and
was,
your
yeah,
partner.
my other partner. Yeah. Anyway, so it, I never really did come out. I came out to one of my friends who was queer. I said, "Terry, I'm queerer than a $3 bill." She goes, "No, sir." And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "How do you know?" And I said, "Because I have a girlfriend."
Those
Just
were the
kind of,
days, right?
yeah, those were the days. And that was in the 80s, you know. So there you go. Well, actually, 70, late 70s.
She was at our wedding.
Oh, she was at our wedding, Terry.
Oh.
We grew up together. So anyway, I never really did come out.
I have to tell you a story though. We were watching family movies at Mary's sister's house a couple years ago, and like from their childhood, and there's
Oh,
little Mary in her red velvet dress
with
with
the
big
white
white
collar.
collar and a holster and a gun and a sword. And I was
Oh.
like, oh, of course, there you are.
There I am.
Oh.
Yeah, I hated dresses, always wore pants, always played with the boys, always had guns and G.I. Joes and, you know, the whole thing growing up,
Motorcycles.
motorcycles. So, yeah, I was not really a big surprise to anyone. Although I did
Oh.
kind of have a coming out probably in 2015 or 16. I had pushed away my masculinity forever. And then I was on a dating website and saw this woman's profile, and she was talking all about butches and femmes and all this stuff. And you would think I would have picked that up by then, but I hadn't. And so I took a deep dive a couple of days into everything butch and femme and learned everything I, you know, it was everything. And then I'm like, you know, I'm going to take a bike ride, try and think this out. So I went on this 3-hour bike ride and thought, you know, it's my life. I need to figure, you know, I've kind of figured it out now, and I just need to be me. Just be me now. So I, in the next few months, I got rid of all my clothes and bought all new clothes and should cut my hair off. And yeah, I did all kinds of things. So hence the product I am today.
Wow, amazing.
Oh, yeah. So
Before
that
we take
was
the break, I want to ask you, Mary, what happened to the PE teacher?
nothing. She kept her job. I mean, you know, there was nothing inappropriate between us, but we just hung out all the time.
But never any conversation about
Oh no,
being
never. She
gone.
was married to a man. Still is. I saw
Oh,
her. I actually saw her a couple of weeks ago. I was like,
interesting.
oh,
Okay.
there's some memories. So yeah, but eventually she did get in trouble for befriending another student. So she got kind of kicked out of that school district. And anyway.
Okay. Yeah, just curious.
Yeah.
Because she saw something in you, so I didn't know what it was, but.
Yeah. I don't know.
So we are really, really wanting to talk more of, with you two about how you met. Ooh, that's gonna be juicy, right? But first, we want to talk about your music. We have a music break. I know you brought a song, and we heard it. It's beautiful. So tell us, how did you come to love that song? I guess, and how did it come about? So
And what's the name?
what's the name of it? Yeah.
The name is Black and White by Niall Horan, and
From One Direction,
oh
the
yeah,
group One Direction. Yeah.
which I never listened to, but
I didn't either.
love this song. And this is the acoustic version of it. We love to slow dance. That's one of our things that we do, just sometimes when we're just feeling it or if we're having a date or whatever. And this one Mary introduced to me, it's someone telling his love story, and it goes from the day they met to standing in front of all of their friends and getting married. And it's called Black and White, I think, as a reference sort of to what it's like to, the bride and groom or whatever, that sort of black suit, white dress. But it's also a reference to looking at a photograph from the past and thinking of the future of what it is you want to bring, what you're building together. And it just is, it is the song we chose to walk into for our wedding. And we put all the words in the program, and we really, really wanted everyone to be able to hear the words and get it, like get this message. And I don't think that really happened because I don't think they knew that that's what we wanted. But we just love this song, is just so beautiful. So,
All right, everybody, it's Niall Horan singing Black and White, and we will see you on the other side.
That first night we were standing at your door and fumbling for your keys, then I kissed you and asked me if I wanna come inside. Cause we didn't wanna end the night. Then you took my hand and followed you. Yeah, I see. Black and white, crystal clear in the starlit night, and all your gorgeous colors. I promise that I'll love you for the rest of my life. See who's there in your dress, and swear in front of all our friends we'll never be another. I promise that I'll love you for the rest of my life. Now we're sitting in your living room, telling stories while we share a drink or two. And there's a vision I've been holding in my mind. 65 in the US, when did I first know? I always knew. Hey, I see us in black and white. Starlit night and all your gorgeous colors. I promise that I'll love you for the rest of my life. See you there in your dress, swimming in front of all our friends. We'll never be another. I promise that I'll love you for the rest of my life. And I want the world to witness.
And if you just joined us, you're listening to Living Proof, and our guests tonight are Susie Stonefield and Mary Rumiano. We just heard a beautiful song by Niall Horan called Black and White. So that was a beautiful song, Black and White. Thank you so much for bringing that to us. I know it means a lot to you, and the lyrics are beautiful. So we were talking about your wedding and your coming out, and we were going to get into anything else you want us to know, like how you met or anything you wanted to add from the last segment.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to just say one of the things that I find so poignant about what Mary just shared of her coming out was, first of all, she was 56 when she had that realization. And I was 56 when I had my realization. And I think that that sort of just seems like one of those amazing coincidences, but not really coincidences. But also, when I saw her picture, we met the old-fashioned way on a dating app, her, the lesbian dating app. But when I saw her picture, I just thought, oh my God, this woman is so gorgeous. I can't not reach back to her. But the problem was that she lived way outside of my zone, my dating range. So it's because we've told the story because it's so hilarious to us, but my range on that app was 5 miles. I was living in Alameda and I didn't even want to go park in San Francisco. Like, nobody was worth that to me. Like, don't make me commute to you.
And I live in a place where it's a pretty small pond. There's not a lot of single lesbians who would want to date. Well, there's a lot I don't know, but it's just too small of a place. So I put my range like 200 miles because I knew I would never find anybody, you know, in Sacramento. I don't know. Anyway, so yeah, my range was huge.
But Mary paid for her app and I didn't. I had the free version. So I'm pretty
after
sure,
a week, I paid for the app.
I'm pretty sure that was why she slid into my feed or I slid into hers, even though she was way outside my range. But so she sent me a message and I looked at her pictures and I was like, all right, I have to say hello to this person. And I did. But like the first thing I said was, are you really 134 miles away from me? But she assured me she liked to drive and that she was retired. And so it should be fine. But guess what? I ended up here in Chico.
What were the things that you both were looking for on your app? What did you say? I'm curious.
You know, I don't remember what mine said. And I don't know if I talked a lot about myself. It was pretty short and sweet because that's kind of how I roll. I'm not a big chatty person, as you can tell. But, you know, I think the first thing is always the picture. It's a draw. And then I looked at her profile and it, you know, said she was Jewish and what her work was. And I thought, oh, that's really great. And so that was the first draw. But the interesting thing was, and I'll go back a little bit, is that we found out that in 1985, well, she was married to Mark for 30 years, and I had a partner for 30 years. In 1985, I was in Florence when Susie lived in Florence, and so we were there at the same time. And then in 2019, we were at the Santa Rosa Pride together.
My first Pride.
Her first Pride. We were there at the same time. So, you know, it was just little things like that. But I think the biggest thing that we both talked about early was that we both came out of really toxic relationships kind of at the same time. So, you know, we kind of joked that if we had met 10 years earlier, we wouldn't have liked each other as much because we've had the same experiences and we learned so much from those that we know who we are now. You know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I learned so much from that. You know, it was hard to go through, but I learned so much about myself and relationships. And it was really, really kind of a good thing. You know, we kind of trauma bonded a little bit over that, you know, over the harshness of that bad time. But yeah, we talked for a few days and then we had our first Zoom date and it was 3 hours long. And the funny part was I had never used Zoom.
She got through the whole pandemic without ever using Zoom.
I didn't even know what it was. Well, I knew what it was, but I didn't know how to work it or anything. So I was a little nervous for that. And then So we got through that, and then the next Zoom was 5 hours long, and then so we just kept talking and talking and talking and talking.
So who made the drive first? I have a feeling it was you, Mary.
Yes, it was, of course. Susie was out of town for like 2 weeks or something, a
Just
week.
a weekend, but yeah.
Yeah, the schedule, our schedules couldn't work for like 3 weeks, and so Susie was coming back from San Diego, so I went and picked her up at the airport in
How
Delaware.
was that very first time when you actually could be with each other? Did you guys
It
hug or
was,
what did you do? Uh-oh.
well, there was a big
They're
conversation.
laughing.
I left it up to Susie. I said, "Well, if you know, where do you want your first kiss?" And she's like, "Oh, I think I wanted it in my house, and I want it to be private, and all the stuff." And so I pick her up at the airport. I get out of my truck and I come around, and she's like this, with
What? Like
her
what?
arms out.
Describe it. Describe
And
it.
she, yeah,
Her arms
she's like, her arms
stretched.
are out like this, and she's smiling ear to ear and standing on the curb, and I go up to hug her, and she kisses me right on the lips. It's like, okay, well, there's that. I guess that was it.
How was that for you, Susie, when you came out of the airport with your luggage and you see Mary and her truck getting out of her truck? What was that like?
Well, it was actually the build up to this event was huge. Like we had been texting and talking incessantly for the weeks up to it about relationships. Like I just never talked about relationships the way we did, and just processing and exploring every single aspect that we could think of to feel safe and loved and accepted and all these things and have good communication.
And values and
Yeah, our values.
therapy and all the things.
Yeah. And I was down in San Diego visiting some women who are in their 80s and 90s who had been students of mine online. I was meeting them in person for the first time and was staying with one of them who's 91. And they were ex excited about me meeting Mary in person as I was practically. So it felt like they sent me off. They're like, go meet your love. And so when I arrived, I was anxious, I was nervous, and also just like couldn't wait. And she was all gussied up. She was so
Oh.
handsome. And yeah, she drives up in her big old truck. Quintessential butch truck and steps out. She's wearing a bow tie and she polished her leather shoes. She's wearing her jeans that look so hot. And oh my God, I don't know. It was sort of, we were already, that was it. We didn't need to meet in person to know that this was it anyway. So it was pretty great.
And both at 56.
Well, but when we met, I was 60,
60?
60, yeah, I was
Oh,
63.
yeah. What's your age difference? How many years difference is it?
Three.
Three years. Our birthdays are one day apart.
That's
Right,
another
next
thing.
to each other. So I want to tell you about wasabi because I mentioned it earlier. I definitely don't want this to not be talked about. So we were out to dinner with my oldest son, Harry, and his wife, Naomi. And they were sharing with us this practice that they have. They said, we are both people pleasers, and we know that if we don't check in with each other, that it's easy for both of us to agree to do things without checking in with ourselves that we actually don't really want to do. And so because we know that about each other, we have this, like, it's almost like a safe word that we say to let the other person know they need to check in with themselves because we got them, and we sort of get they might not have checked in with themselves. So in other words, I think their word is poodle or pineapple. I don't know,
Whatever.
something. So somebody says, hey, do you want to go do blah blah? And the other one says, yeah. And then the first one says, pineapple. And then that is the key, the clue to the other person. Okay, you need to check in with yourself. And it's okay if you don't want to go and do this thing I just suggested. What's more important is that you're honest with yourself and with me. And I can handle you. And I love you. And I see you. And I know you. It's like amazing. This one word communicates so much. So they shared that. And Mary and I look at each other. We're like, we're totally doing that. Feeling
Mm-hmm.
it. And so we call it wasabi. Our word is wasabi, and it is the most important thing that has ever happened to our relationship, I think. And we use it probably less now than we
Now,
used to,
yeah.
but at first we used it quite a bit. First of all, you use it the way I just described, like you propose something that other person sort of goes along with it without really checking in. But also we use it when we have something hard to talk about and we have to be really vulnerable, and the people pleaser in us would rather ignore it and deny it and pretend, just like not go there. But because of what we have, we know that we can do this. We need to do, we have to do this. So I'll say, I have a wasabi. And when I say I have a wasabi, or Mary says that to me, the other person puts everything down and gives full attention. Okay, let's talk. What is it? And then we have the hard conversation, whatever it is, because you're basically saying, I have to be really vulnerable with you and tell you something that makes me unhappy or uncomfortable or disappointed or whatever.
Within the relationship, right, Susie? Or just anything in general? Within the
No,
relationship.
it's
Within the
mostly, yeah, it's
relationship.
most
Mostly.
a
Okay.
relationship. Yeah.
Because if it's about somebody else, it's not a wasabi for Mary. It's really because of our nature of wanting to avoid the uncomfortable things that
Yeah.
we need to use that practice. It because of our the kind of communication we have, it's just made it possible for us to keep being honest and keep going deep and keep addressing the things that for a lot of relationships would end up being the things that you build up resentments over time, right? We just don't have any of that. We take care of it as it comes.
It would seem to me that you both had 30-year relationships and you know how that other stuff worked. You hold on to it, you don't let it out, it
Right.
builds up re resentment. So you've been there, and now you both have chosen very consciously to do something different, to have
Yes, very much
wasabi in your lives.
so.
Now, you mentioned that you used it more in the earlier part of your relationship and less now. Why do you think that is so?
I think it may be because in our everyday conversation, we just talk kind of like that now, instead of having to make it an event, just like I have a wasabi, unless it's really, really, really something important or something that happened, or one of us made each other uncomfortable and you could tell, or something like that. But it's, I think, from the beginning, I could not be in another relationship where somebody wasn't honest and trustworthy about themselves. And about the relationship. And so it kind of just fits in. It fits in with that. And Susie and I really, I don't know, I don't want to say bonded, but we really saw eye to eye on that thing. And so at the beginning, we kind of practiced a lot with each other, and we'd say things and see how the other one would react. I think we were kind of, trying it out, see how that other person was. But then, sometimes wasabi's important because it's something that's really hard. And it's not an attack, and it's not you did this or you did that. It's not like that at all. The person that says they need the wasabi, it's something about them, which means it's not about you.
But we're learning. I think part of the reason we aren't using it as much is that it's way easier just to say the truth right off the bat now. Mary did just the most incredible work on herself in between her toxic relationship and meeting me. And she didn't date anyone for 2 years in between. She just was working on herself and trying to figure out how she had ended up in that relationship and what had happened.
And why I stayed was a
Why
lot
you
of it.
stay? Yes, yes.
It
And
was
I think
against a lot of things.
both of
And
us
the way
had
I
that.
felt inside was awful. And so it was a lot of that. But I had to figure that out. I had to do a gigantic self-assessment. And it took a long time.
So I would say that from the minute I met her, I started learning what she had learned for herself because she shared it with me. And it was just inspiring to hear about how she could be so self-reflective. And honestly, I've never been with anyone who's so good at handling conflict and has boundaries that are not like a fortress, but just this calm, place where she can say to me when I'm emotional about something, that sounds really hard. And I've never had anyone do that. And I don't do that very well at all. I'll just say that I don't do it back to her very well. I'm learning, but it's hard. But it always, to me, was somebody else who would get really, really reactive and take it really personally. And Mary is so good at just holding the space for me, you know, and allowing me to have my feelings and not taking it on herself. And that's been incredible. And the other thing I learned from her that I think was really important was she always said to me, "You're going to disappoint people," which, you know, if you're a people pleaser, is really hard. Really hard to embrace that idea. But she just, I hear her voice, "You're going to disappoint people." Okay. And she says, "You're going to disappoint me, and I'm going to disappoint you." If we can just embrace that, expect it. Okay.
Look at you two. How long has it been?
Two and a
Since
half.
we started dating?
Or yeah.
Since we met, two and a half, almost
Two
two and a
and a
half
half
years, not
years.
quite.
I mean, this interview is really powerful in a sense where we like to do interviews like this, especially with couples, to let people hear stories and how to navigate their relationships.
Right.
And so you're teaching.
Yeah, well, speaking of which, we always like to get advice from our guests or words of wisdom, like what Di's saying, people learn from you and your experiences. So if you were to wrap up your life philosophy, what do you think you could, what words of wisdom could you impart on the rest of us?
Well, I think you have to love yourself first. Really, really important to love yourself first. And also to not be afraid of the truth. Because if you're afraid of the truth, then you're going to hide it from yourself and you're going to hide it from everyone else. And that fear is going to keep you from living your truth. And I would say that was true for me in not coming out. I was so afraid of what was going to happen, what I was going to lose, who I was going to lose, how would I live, da da da. But it's the same in a relationship, being afraid to share what the truth is. You know, what is the fear? The fear is you're going to lose everything, or the fear is they're going to be angry with you, or whatever. But it's so much more important to embrace it and go into that scary place, because that's where you can let it go. You can release it. You can sometimes, you know, shine a light on it, and it's not quite as scary as it was when it was hiding under your bed. And I think that's something that I learned for myself in coming out, and it's something I've really been able to have in this relationship, because we have so much trust, and it's such a safe place to go into those scary places.
I would
Susie.
say, seconding Susie's know yourself, and that is to know your values, what you value in life, and you know, like have five core values that you have. And when you meet someone, it's okay for you to let them go if they don't meet those. You know, and if you can't find a way to have it be amicable with the one you're not in tune with, how do you figure that out? Or how do you figure that out? And so that's one thing that really helped me. I learned that from my wonderful therapist. And also, I think self, not assessment, self
Awareness.
awareness. Thank you very much.
Read your mind.
Self awareness is probably the biggest, most important thing that I figured out how to do. You know, somebody says something, you take it in. How do I resonate with that? Or do I not like that? Or do I like that? And then figure out if it goes, you know, with my values or against my values. But, and if, especially if I'm a very visceral person, so I feel things, you know, so if I feel inside that that makes me feel icky or uncomfortable, it's like, oh, yeah, no. So that's one thing I think is really important. If it doesn't fit you, It's not for you.
Oh,
You
nice.
know? Yeah,
Yeah.
and we get caught up in the, oh my God, this person is la 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 la, and you're like over the top, and you're not even paying attention to what the values are, what the things are, and then we get stuck in relationships we don't want to be in and don't know how to get out. So,
Wow,
yeah.
beautiful. Wow, thank you so much. We want to say happy Pride.
Yes.
What's happening in your lives this Pride Month? What's going on?
Our local
Celebration.
celebration is June 7th.
Yeah, June
Yeah, June
7th.
7th,
So we'll do that.
next sat couple Saturdays from now. And then we're going to be in San Francisco for a few days for Pride there
End of the month. Can't
at the end
wait.
of the month.
Right. You're living it.
Yeah.
Being proud.
Yeah,
Yay.
I know my big gay life.
Yeah. Big gay life.
We
Wonderful.
actually
Thank you
have
so
Pride.
much. Thank you so much.
We want to thank you, like Di said, thank you so much. And we want everyone to remember, just like Mary and Susie, you too can be living proof that through being visible and vibrant, you too can make this world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then, good
Good
night.
Happy Pride!
Happy Pride!
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can do the same, yeah.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCBFM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCBFM Roanoke Park and KRCGFM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. The Jazz Hot is next.